Chelan County Public Utility District Number 1. This is primarily a virtual meeting due to the COVID pandemic, and who knows how long we will still be in this format, but it could be for a while still. We currently have 4 commissioners present. Commissioner McKenna will not be with us today, and the regular staff are in the boardroom: Rebecca Newman, Eric Walquist, and Steve Wright, our general manager. I failed to say Rebecca's the clerk of the board, and Eric is our general counsel. We like to say that Rebecca really is the in charge of this meeting, but I won't put that on the record. So, so due to the virus, we are meeting remotely. And while I would normally remind everyone to silence their cell phones, I'll still remind you of that. But in addition to that, remind you to, unless you're speaking, to go on mute with your Teams button. That really helps us in the conduct of the meeting, unless you're speaking on a subject matter. We do value public input at our meetings, and we will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session and at the end of the afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded, and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. And I would ask, there's some background noise right now, so if somebody's not on mute, I would appreciate mute. Our flag salute and our safety minute today will be brought to us today by Josh Mandoli, and we just found out that he's of Italian heritage, and really appreciate that little chat before we turned on the recording. So, Josh, if you take it away.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Josh Mandoli. I'm an electrical engineer for the Engineering and Project Management Department here at Rock Island Dam. Full-time a little over 2 years now. I got the opportunity to be an engineering student 2 summers prior to that. I appreciate the opportunity to take a minute of your time this morning to discuss an incident we had a couple months ago and the learning team that followed that. So a little bit of background to get you up to speed. I have been a part of the ongoing structural repairs project here at Rock Island Dam to the spillway. To handle some of the electrical impacts from those repairs that included relocating circuits, ran in embedded conduits throughout the road deck. And so, as you can see in this opening slide here, we installed a bunch of new conduit work and removed a bunch of abandoned conduit that was no longer in use and damaged over time. Rebecca, you can move to the next slide. Throughout this project, there was a great deal of electrical demo that was performed to remove some of the abandoned cabling as well as conduit from the spillway. Most of that work was performed this spring, but due to some of our high flow and fish spill seasons, the removal work was postponed until this fall. When the cleanup resumed, the wiremen were working cable by cable, removing the length from the road deck into the powerhouse. When they were removing one of these cables, the wiremen were struggling to access the one they were focused on, and there was one that was in their way. And so in order to provide better access, the wiremen proceeded to cut that cable, and in doing that, there was an audible indication that that cable was energized. Thankfully, the breaker protection prevented any flash, and the insulated tools that he was using prevented any harm to him. We're very thankful of that. Luckily, no one was harmed, no equipment was damaged other than the cable, and in the spirit of HPI, you can move to the next slide. The learning team was held to discuss the lessons learned and how we can put steps in place moving forward. The learning team was the wiremen, safety department, operators who were on site that day, and then engineering, myself as well. to highlight some of the opportunities where we could improve. Go to the last slide here. So first and foremost, the wiremen who were working one cable at a time, working from a known, they had a cut end of the cable, we're removing that, and performing energy verification checks prior to that. So then jumping onto the next cable without performing any energy verification was a break in their process and ultimately led to a mistake, which is kind of that first tier of HPI that we see. There was also a gap and delay in the work due to the spill season. Anytime when you leave something and pick it up again, it's always good to circle up and have a walkthrough so engineering and the crew can combine documentation and visual verification by opening some of those enclosures and confirming exactly what needed to be removed, since at that time it was anticipated all of the cables where they were working were going to be removed. And then also a lack of documentation and labeling on a lot of these older cables created a lot of time investigating and identifying which cables needed to be removed. So moving forward, these cables will be documented on our conduit plans, and any cables will be labeled in intermediate pull points, so anybody who interfaces with them in the future can readily reference any documentation they need to get a better idea of what that cable is used for, voltage, items like that. And then lastly, one thing I think is a big positive that from this project is oftentimes cables that are no longer in use or damaged are lifted, but the process of actually removing that cable is often not prioritized, and we end up with a lot of cabling sitting around that nobody knows quite what it was used for. So I appreciate the wireman's commitment to finishing the job, going above and beyond to remove all this conduit and cabling. We will have a cleaner and safer facility moving forward because of their work. I really appreciate everybody's involvement in this learning team and having that collaborative approach to how we can put steps in place moving forward. Thankfully, no one was harmed in this event, but I think we all learned a lot, and I think there's a lot of lessons that we can take away from it and help us improve in the future. Any questions?
Well, thank you, Josh. That was an impressive safety moment, because it was a real life one that it surprised me when to hear what you said. How old were those cables? Are those original?
Yeah, so a lot of those cables, especially in the pull box photos you saw, were a lot of the original gate operating, a lot of the controls and power feeds for the old gate operators. So those were original to the Powerhouse 1 era. So.
Wow. Very, very good safety moment. Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Just well done. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Just well done, and really good information. And I have memory of we built our own home, and a couple years later, we were finishing the downstairs, and I worked most of the day on a series of lines that I thought were shut off, only to find out about 4 o'clock in the afternoon by sparks. One I'd been working on wasn't. And it was an enlightening experience. So I can identify. Yep. I wasn't harmed, but I was certainly alerted. So, and humbled. Holy moly.
Commissioner Arsenault.
Thank you, Randy. Josh, just a question. The one line that you discovered that was energized, was it still providing a function, or was it energized but dormant for use?
Yeah, so this particular area they were working in, what we call the conduit space level in Powerhouse 1, all of the cables were anticipated to be removed, but this one particular cable was actually to a disconnect that had been installed recently. So going through all the documentation, it looked like we had everything accounted for, but didn't go through, you know, jump into that next step, not tracing out that cable or providing verification. We didn't catch that, which ultimately led to the mistake. So
that's a great HPI presentation. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Yes. Okay, well, thanks again. And pleasure to meet you. I'm not sure if any of my fellow commissioners had met you before, but it's always good to see the youth that's moving into positions like yours of responsibility. That means we're going the right direction. So
I appreciate it, Randy. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda, and I don't believe that management has recommended any change in the agenda today, and the only item on the morning agenda is the business plan, and so I would suggest that I would suggest if somebody wants to speak to any item on the agenda, I would ask them to share that with me now, but since we only have one item, I'll wait till the end, and I'll ask if there's any public comment on the presentation of our five-year business plan. Steve Wright.
Okay, thank you. So this is our once a year session where we get ready to initiate the budget planning process, and we always do that by starting with the five-year business plans. These have been under construction starting in February with discussions by the senior management team and have led to an initial set of proposals from the business units that have been reviewed by the senior management team. With this presentation, we'll be laying out where we think we're going over the course of the next 5 years, primarily about implementing the strategic plan. And that will lead to future presentations at future board meetings where we'll begin to focus on 2022 and ultimately leading to decisions in December for the 2022 budget. So what we'll cover today, mission, vision, values, and objectives. An overview of the five-year business plan, some of the key drivers that have led us to these business plans, an important discussion about known unknowns, things that could change the budgets during the course of the next year. And then, as we've done in the past, we'll walk through each of the operating unit business plans. Just to start with, for the mission, no change here from what was adopted in the strategic plan to enhance the quality of life in Chelan County by providing sustainable, reliable utility services, with that focus being on the enhancing the quality of life at the beginning of the sentence. And our vision statement, recognizing that we live in a world that's constantly changing, we will provide best value for the most people for the longest period of time. Our values have not changed from last year either. We continue to focus on safety, trustworthiness, stewardship, and operational excellence. From there, we move to our balanced scorecard, and this is much the same, but with one change. And we haven't had a change to the balanced scorecard since the strategic plan was adopted. We continue to focus on our customer owners and stewardship of the resources that we operate that have an impact outside the county at the top of our balance scorecard. Continue to focus on making sure we have financial stability, that we're using a continuous improvement mindset and investing in long-term value around the way we operate our business from an internal perspective. Our enablers continue to be advancing human and organizational performance and encouraging innovation. But you'll notice the yellow box in the middle there, where we have added fostering a culture of serving the public interest. I believe this is something that really has been going on at the district for a while, and it fully supports the mission statement of enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County. We wanted to call it out, though, as part of our performance plan development to focus on the fact that this is something really important to us, that we provide a service that is a value not just to the community, but a value in terms of recruitment and retention for our employees, that we do meaningful and important work here, and that we should continue to celebrate that as a way of not just recruiting and retaining great people, but also in bringing out the best in them. Next up, we have been using this liquidity forecast for, I think, the last 8 years now. So this is an update compared against last year about our forecast of our financial situation. The solid lines are the update for this year. The dotted lines are the last year's forecast. The green line is the minimum liquidity target that we seek to achieve, that roughly $200 million. Note that we start the year better off than we had forecasted last year. That's because we're expecting 2021 to be a good year based on our second quarter financial results and what we've seen so far in third quarter. It looks like we're going to have a much better than anticipated year, at least at start of year. The market has definitely been good for us. We've seen an uptick in the market. But as we'll describe more in detail in a moment, we also have had some significant increases, particularly in our capital costs and to a lesser extent in our operating costs. We are anticipating that we will re-enter the bond market in 2023. That's a year later than what we had forecast in last year's five-year business plan. You'll note that under the low revenue scenario, that could be somewhat earlier, although only a little bit earlier, mostly because we continue to operate an aggressive hedging program, which gives us a fair amount of confidence about our revenue stream for the next 5 years.
Steve?
Yes.
I would be curious to see this chart from 5 years ago in terms of, I can't remember exactly when we anticipated 5 years ago we would be re-entering the bond market, but that would be an interesting factoid to have.
Okay, and so we have been doing this every year, so you would like us to go back to 2016?
Yeah, and see when we anticipated we would need to be back in the borrowing.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I had the assignment right. So we'll take a look at that and pull that up for you.
Thank you.
And I should have invited questions along the way anyway. So Randy, thanks for jumping in. And any others, please feel free to jump in any place along the way. Okay, next up we want to compare just some more specifics about what's changed since last year that underlies that liquidity graph. First of all, our bottom line, we anticipate being $100 million better for that 2022 to 2027 period. That's mostly made up of the increase in the market, the net wholesale revenues. You see that at $98 million. There are some offsetting expenses. Notice the operating expense line is up about $44 million. But those expenses are offset by the fact that we have the cost-plus contracts that produce about $34 million more revenue. And our non-operating expense is down about $12 million because net we actually will carry less debt and carry less interest payments as a result of that. That's the primary driver, at least, of that line. Note the increase in capital expenditures. That $115 million is a large increase that is primarily composed of the activities at the hydro projects, the biggest one being the presentation that we made to the board a few months ago about moving forward with Rock Island Powerhouse 2, and the cost of that project is higher than originally projected, and we added the extended warranty as well. So there are some new costs there that are offsetting the bottom line impacts. One way to think about that on net is debt outstanding at the end of the period. That's down about $22 million compared against where we were last year. You can see the significant difference in market prices in those last two numbers, the heavy load and light load numbers, compared against last year. And we do anticipate the potential for being able to take more advantage of that over the course of the next year. All right, so we've gone through a planning cycle, and we like to step back and say, so what are the key learnings? What's changed from last year? First of all, obviously the big one that we've talked about a couple of times already, energy markets have changed. We see particularly the capacity in carbon markets have strengthened, and there is a lot more volatility. That volatility is leading to periods of short-term higher prices than as a result of that, the forward price curves are going up because the market is responding and recognizing that there is a supply-demand problem in the region. There is some real progress being made on resource adequacy. It looks like the region is really coming together around putting resource adequacy rules in place, shooting for having that in place by 2023 in a binding fashion. Mentioned before, we've had increased expenditures for capital and operation and maintenance projects. COVID-19 has just really created a lot of uncertainty. Even when we think that we're coming out of it, we may not be. So that has made it more difficult to understand project forecasts, both spending and schedule. And we're seeing a lot of challenges with supply chain that are continuing and not really receding as we've moved through COVID. We're making some progress, and we'll talk some more about how we're trying to get to first quartile status and hydro capability, distribution, reliability, and safety. But we have a lot of work left to do in those areas. And we'll certainly continue through at least this five-year planning period of the strategic plan. Good news on our financial policy metrics. We're meeting them all. If anything, we're even in a stronger financial position than we were last year. We've made some tremendous progress in terms of information technology. We do have a new organization in place. We're revamping the strategy and process. It's going to give us the opportunity to better be able to access data and tools across the district to support decision making. We've made a lot of progress with respect to finding opportunities for large load growth that could occur here in the county without creating a significant rate impact for existing customers. And we are in the midst of the fiber expansion program acceleration by 2 years to create better value for the county. Although I will say that that, along with our distribution reliability goal, have proven to be quite challenging. Our key drivers, no surprise for our board, I don't think, maintaining strong and resilient district financials, seeking to improve the hydro capability to that first quartile 89% range, but really being challenged by competing project schedules to reach that goal and some of the contract support that we have been provided. We have plans in place to hit the distribution reliability goal, but we'll talk about this more in a moment. It's proving to be more challenging because some of the fire safety issues that are out there. We did not really have the long-term marketing strategy embedded in the strategic plan in the way that we are now working on it. We have seen this dramatic uptick in the market in the last 12 months, and that has caused us to refocus our efforts and really focus on the long-term marketing strategy, and that's taking away from some of the other things that we would have done. Our new district facilities are moving ahead. Of course, we're complete at Rock Island. We're complete at the Discovery Center. We're approaching completion at the Rocky Reach facilities and should be able to be moved in and taking advantage of that in 2022. And, of course, anybody driving up North Wenatchee Avenue can see the work that's going on at the Service Center and that we're making some good progress there. Human Performance Initiative is one that we continue to work on, and you'll be seeing more from us on that in the next few months as we begin to solidify our plans there for how to build that even more strongly into our culture, along with our efforts on workplace safety. The economic growth alternative is looking quite positive, and it is, we'll describe later, one of the key known unknowns for the next year as to how fast that will proceed. Our public power benefit program, after the board's decision to expand it from $4 million to $6 million, is moving ahead, and the board will have some key decisions over the course of the next couple of years about how to best allocate those funds. We have started the solicitation process with the public. We're beginning to get things that are coming in, so there'll be a lot more activity on that front. And we intend to really leverage innovation and technology. I would say the organization is increasingly embracing the opportunities that they have to be able to use data to make better decisions. Our strategic plan goals have not changed. These are the same four goals from the beginning: investing in assets and people, trying to drive toward that top quartile performance and hydro retail reliability and safety, seeking to sustain excellent financial resiliency while mitigating the risk of large rate increases, enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County through the Public Power Benefit Program, and engaging in countywide growth planning and job creation efforts while ensuring that the district's rates and policies for existing customers remain stable and predictable. So let's talk about each one of these four goals. Investing in assets and people, we're continue to seek improvements in hydro capability, pursuing that first quartile goal, but we have had some schedule delays, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. We're seeking that first quartile in distribution reliability, but once we made the decision to accelerate the fiber program because of the amount of make-ready work on poles that was necessary in order to achieve the fiber acceleration goal, we're definitely challenged to have resources available that can accomplish both of those goals. Trying to move forward with safety and HPI to get to first quartile. We did implement this year a fire safety outage management program. We didn't really know that was coming. We put the strategic plan together. That was a decision from a year ago, just about now, as we saw what was happening in California and in Oregon. So we've put that in place, and that has taken some resources away from other things, but certainly put us in a better position to deal with the what has become an extraordinary risk associated with wildfire. And we continue to add a lot of tools, and we'll talk some more about what we're doing in the technology arena and how those tools will benefit our customer owners. We want to take a moment and just pause and realize that investing in assets and people is a strategy that was at first adopted in the 2015-19 strategic plan. A lot of planning work has gone into implementing that. We are now in full-scale implementation. So 2021, 2022, 2023 will be the most likely high water marks for our capital and O&M spends. There is just a lot of work going on, and you can see that as you wander around Chelan County. There's a lot of construction activity. And then a lot of things that people can't see going on inside of hydro turbines. So this is a particularly challenging time for the district in terms of taking a workforce that has grown some, but not proportionate to the amount of capital and O&M increase in spending that we have put in place, recognizing that these are going to be most likely peak years, unless, of course, new opportunities come forward for the district. Few of the big projects that are out there, the board is familiar with all of these, the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 modernization that we agreed to earlier this year, the distribution infrastructure, primarily AMI, and we also expect to have our new automatic distribution management system in place later this year. Powerhouse 1 modernization, we are still working away on that. The schedule for completion is now delayed some. And the service center activity. Talk for a moment about hydro system capability. This is the graph that we displayed last year. The orange line is the forecast from last year. The green line is our forecast for this year. You'll note that the end point is of hitting that 89% target is moved out only by one quarter, but the path to get there has changed rather significantly. So we are anticipating at this point that it will take us a little bit more than a year longer to complete Rock Island Powerhouse 1 and a little bit more than a year longer to complete the refurbishment of C-10 and 11, the big units at Rocky Reach, that were delayed in part because we're trying to take on more work at Rock Island Powerhouse 1, give ourselves more confidence with respect to those schedules. So there are some changes there, and yet at the same time, we still see opportunity to be able to get to that high-level performance by the end of the strategic plan period. Distribution system reliability is changing as well. Recall that last year was the first year where we had established a goal. We were at that 50 to 65-minute range of customer outage minutes per year. We were trying to get that down to the 13-minute range, so pretty dramatic change. The board out last year allocated money for both tree trimming and for underground cable replacement. Those continue to be assumed here. Because of the conflicts between our fiber objectives and our distribution system reliability objectives, we are assuming that we will do more contracting out of particularly the cable program than what the board has seen previously as part of this budget, which adds some cost to the program. But we believe that we still have a reasonable chance of getting there. The part that has changed pretty significantly is when we put the fire safety outage management program in place, recall that we no longer do automatic reclosing in areas that are suffering from high fire risk. And because of that, that adds to the number of minutes of outages that customers experience. We've estimated that at roughly 10 minutes. My guess is we will get better estimates of that through time. So that has moved the graph upward by 10 minutes compared against what we were anticipating last year. There may be further changes to this. Remember that our program for this year was implemented just for the Plain and Lake Wenatchee area. We anticipate expanding it most likely up to the Lake Chelan area for 2022, and that could have an impact on this graph as well. Mentioned advancing safety in HPI. You should anticipate that you'll hear more from us about this later this year. We are continuing to work to identify the set of programs that we want to put in place and training opportunities for employees that will help us to reduce our lost time accident rate and to be able to improve our ability to implement human performance improvement. I mentioned fire safety outage management. This was the first year that we put in place the pilot program. We've got a lot of good examples of how, once again, we're getting better at using data and technology to be able to understand when we would implement a fire safety outage management program and potentially even a preemptive power shutoff. We're just learning and learning fast in this area, and it's having the impact on our overall strategic goals. Made a lot of progress this year on becoming a leader in utility technology. This would be a very big jump for this organization to move from where we're at to being a leader in utility technology. Our new IT reorganization is, for the most part, in place. The management structure is fully in place. In addition, under Ian Fitzgerald's leadership, we have a new way of thinking about how we manage IT projects. What's described as the agile mindset, which is the industry term that's used to try to describe a way of being of using adaptive management to respond to the variety of things that are always coming up as you're trying to manage IT projects. We're really focused on delivering customer value with our technology initiatives, and we'll talk about that in just a moment when we show you our roadmaps. And yet we know we still have a lot of work to do. Even in terms of organization and governance, we have some key things we're working on, but we feel like we're at a point now when we're beginning to hit our stride and make progress. Reorganizations, as we all know, lead to generally a decline in productivity and then hopefully a jump in productivity. And my belief is we're past the decline and into the jump. Been working on this slide for a while now, and we presented something similar last year, but I think it's advanced quite a bit. This slide shows you the key different IT projects that are going on across the district, but rather than focusing on the terminology about what a particular piece of equipment does, this focuses on what value would be created for customers. I just want to pause for a moment on this and identify a few of the many stars that are on here. With our ADMS, our Automatic Distribution Management System, we do expect to be able to have outage maps that customers will be able to see to understand what's going on when they have an outage at their house, how widespread is that outage, and hopefully some view with respect to estimated time of restoration, expecting that to be available early in 2022. We should be rolling out our smart meters in 2022, which is going to create opportunities for folks to be able to see better what their usage is at their house, be able to understand that when there are questions about it. It will, sometime in 2023, allow us to have a prepay option. And again, some people may wonder, why would you want to prepay for your electricity? Well, some folks would prefer to do that rather than provide us a security deposit. So there are some real advantages potentially to a prepay option. We expect to have much greater ability to engage with customers, particularly on web and mobile devices, where folks could see their usage, ultimately even time of use understanding, hopefully moving into receiving text and email notifications in that 2023 timeframe when things are going on that are relevant to them. Our field work management should improve as we get to the ability to have more mobile devices in the field so that our field folks aren't having to traipse back and forth to be able to get blueprints and maps. And we expect that we should be able to even improve our fiber interruption response time, as well as provide better service to customers in that 2023 and 2024 timeframe. So this is a big set of initiatives all focused around the top of our balanced scorecard, which is enhancing the customer owner satisfaction. We continue to focus on investing in our people, probably even more than in the past, because as we make these big leaps, it requires more information, continuous improvement in the skill sets of our employees in order to be able to carry out all of these big goals. Our second strategic plan goal of financial resiliency, we're in really a terrific spot, strong bond ratings, resilient financials. We're meeting all our financial policy metrics. The wholesale market is improving, which should actually give us more revenue as we are able to hopefully put in place new long-term contracts. Our cash balance is very strong. We have and are implementing the five-year plan for annual retail rate increases, and we are putting that money aside as committed in the strategic plan into a fund that will help to address any rate challenges the district might have in the future. And so we will actually be bringing that back for more conversation with the board later this year. Our power markets and marketing strategy, again, we've seen really increased volatility. Move forward once, Rebecca. We've seen increased price volatility coupled with that increased capacity and carbon value. The state rules around clean energy transformation are really having a big impact in the market. So we are moving along in terms of conversations. And I would say we've more interest in our product than any time in the time I've been at the district. Let's talk about our third strategic plan goal, the public power benefit. This is a summary of the activities that have been undertaken since the beginning of the public power benefit program. I think the board is very familiar with these. I will call your attention to a couple of them. The Dryden Treatment Plant, we allocated $1.5 million in 2020 for that project, but with the grant money that it appears we will get from the state, we may not need that. So that may end up being a project that is funded with state grant money. In addition, I would want to call out that we spent about $58,000 of the $75,000 the board allocated last year to prepare for the Malika sub for potential for economic development down there. That is turning out to be a very good investment and is really helping us because as we have folks knocking on our door about the potential of siting in Chelan County, we're just in a much better place to be able to respond to them and tell them what the options are. The substation aesthetics is one that was delayed this year. This was primarily around the new Leavenworth Bavarian substation. It was delayed because our folks were really focused on the fire safety outage management, the unplanned work that we threw at them this year. With us getting through the summer season, the anticipation is that we will be able to turn our attention to that and hopefully be able to move forward with the design project there and before the end of the year. In terms of forecasts, for this coming year. You'll note that in 2022, we have allocated 4.5 of the $6 million that the board had had allocated for public power benefit projects. There will be an opportunity later this year to talk some more about what to do with that remaining $1.5 million. There is a fair amount of work going on at Riverfront Park, and I would expect that you'll hear more about that, possibly even at the next board meeting. So there are things going on out there that would create opportunities for being able to allocate the remainder of those dollars. And then you'll see that for the next 2 years, for 2023 and 2024, there's a fair amount of roughly $4 million available in each of those years for PPP projects. It seems prudent at this point to not take an action on that because we are in the process of doing the solicitation that originally had been anticipated to be held in the spring, but we delayed it at the board's request because of COVID and the difficulty for the public to be able to participate. We'll tell you, we already do have proposals that are beginning to roll in to the district, so people are definitely interested in the opportunity for PPP projects. Our fourth goal, strategic goal of economic development, there's a couple of key things that are going on there. We continue to see growth at the Diamond Foundry, slower than they had anticipated, but on the other hand, it continues to grow. They seem to be moving through COVID and able to continue to ramp up their operation. They did get a large capital infusion from a venture capital firm that has put them in a what appears to be a good financial shape, and so we are anticipating them continuing to grow, and they have now applied for service to move beyond the 19 megawatts they have under their current contract up to 24 megawatts with the potential for a 28 megawatt peak. So that's that is the largest load growth that we have going on right now. It is significantly higher than all other load growth that we have. And as I've mentioned a couple of times, we continue to have very interesting conversations with much larger loads around the possibility of serving them, most likely in the South County. Our financial policies look very good. Liquidity through 2026, we meet our target, again, with borrowing starting in 2023, a year later than originally or than anticipated last year. Our coverage ratios are good. The work that finance did last year to, in particular, try to smooth out some of the peaks in debt service has put us in a better position to be able to manage through coverage ratios for an extended period of time. Our debt ratio by 2026 is down to 16%. Last year it was around 18%, so it's the benefit of continuing to have good financial years and being able to further reduce our debt. And we easily meet our days cash on hand on target. So no challenges there. Known unknowns. A lot of these are the same as the previous year, so I won't talk about them all. I do want to speak to the ones in bold here. Supply chain risk is definitely becoming a really serious challenge that is a concern in every project that we are operating. Supply chain risk, both in terms of cost, how much inflation is going on out there, and in terms of schedule, being able to get things delivered when they're anticipated. We are just seeing across the board things that would have taken a month or two now taking 6, 9, 12 months to get here. And that's going to be a problem when you're running as large a capital program as we are running. So we know that's a problem. We don't really have a way of forecasting how big a problem it's going to be. It's not included in these budget forecasts. Federal infrastructure legislation. The district is an infrastructure organization. Water, wastewater, broadband, electric service. All of those are things that are being discussed in federal infrastructure legislation, whether it's in the so-called infrastructure bill or in the budget reconciliation bill. There are lots of packages there. All of those could have pretty significant impacts on opportunities for the district. We have not included that in our budgets, nor staffing to be able to manage it. The increasing large load potential would lead to a significant amount of work in terms of transmission, distribution work, potentially water line extensions, potentially sewer line extensions, and providing broadband service. All of those are things that we can see as a potential, but we're not real enough at this point to include. We think there's a substantial chance that the businesses that would be coming here would be paying for those, but the staffing for it would be a challenge for the district. Relicensing process. So we think we understand the process for the most part. What we don't know at this point is what kinds of things will likely come in through that relicensing process and what financial impacts there might be associated with it. And finally, although it's not in bold, I would add the Columbia River Treaty and the Canadian entitlement outcomes. We still have this contract with the Bonneville Power Administration to provide the entitlement return. That contract only lasts through September of 2024. And so at this point, we don't know what will replace that. We don't see a lot of progress in terms of the negotiations between the U.S. and Canada. So the big umbrella agreement that would potentially affect us, I think we are now assuming that that will not be in place by September of 2024. And so we will have to find a way to negotiate an agreement with Bonneville without the umbrella agreement between the U.S. and Canada. I'm going to pause there and see if the board has any questions before we go into the individual operating unit plans.
Commissioners, questions?
Randy, this is Gary, if I can ask a question.
You bet.
Steve, back on your slide for the 2022-2026 plans, financial policies, and the debt ratio is less than 16% by 2026. And that assumes the debt issuance, correct?
It does, yes.
Okay. That's great. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Other questions from commissioners? So not knowing if there's any public in the meeting or not, this might be a good moment to ask if there's any questions or comments from any member of the public at this break, because I know we're going into detailed business plans. Hearing none, Steve, turn it back to you.
Okay. I'm going to turn this over to Kirk Hudson, who will do the generation and transmission business unit plan.
Good morning, commissioners. Kirk Hudson, managing director of generation and transmission. I also wanted to just comment on the presentation that Steve went over. Just wanted to say, as the incoming general manager after the first of the year, I certainly support the numbers that have been presented there. And as Steve pointed out, that work has been going on to put those numbers together since February. So I feel like we're in a good spot in terms of our planning going forward. There's work plans, there's resources plans that support those numbers. And I am interested after the first of the year in terms of the district performance plan and looking at some of the pacing of some of those items, and Steve and I have talked, and we view that as a passing the baton point in terms of the district performance plan for the first part of next year. So I support the numbers you saw in that last presentation going forward for setting the stage for the budget. With that, I'll ask if Rebecca can pull up the one-page business plan. Go ahead and get started. I think you have that in your packet. There we go. So during the business planning process, we always anchor back to our purpose and how generation and transmission supports the district strategic plan. The five-year business plan for generation and transmission is focused on generating and transmitting clean, renewable hydroelectricity to our customers and purchasers with a high degree of reliability at low cost. The assets on the generation and transmission side provide tremendous amount of benefit in the form of revenue for district operations. And so it's critical that we're good stewards and maintain innovative approach to operating and maintaining those assets going forward. I'm going to touch a little bit on that. Just you can go ahead and scroll back up a little bit, Rebecca. Just on the grid there and the timing, I just wanted to touch on a couple of specific projects there. Not all of them. There's not a lot of changes from last year. We're still implementing that five-year plan. Some of the key outcomes we would expect in the next 5 years is that we would actually complete the last six units at Rock Island Powerhouse 1 and bumping down there to the Rocky Reach Trunnion Bushing Project. That is one of the reasons we've deferred the large units at Rocky Reach was to focus on C1 through 7 trunnion bushing replacements, and we actually hope to have that work done next year. Powerhouse 2, we would expect to complete the first unit at the end of 2024. And then the joint line project, the transmission line, that's Douglas PUD's transmission line that we're contributing to. We would also expect that they would finish that construction this year, which will provide, or not this year, but in the planning horizon. And that would provide additional transmission capacity for the district. So that's a great project. And then almost down to the bottom there, we had on our plan last year to complete the Discovery Center, which was recently completed. So we're looking forward to seeing how many visitors we'll attract at the new Discovery Center in the coming years. Heard nothing but positive comments on those upgrades out there. And then down toward the bottom of that top part too, also completing the new facility upgrades, particularly at Rocky Reach, as Rock Island is for the most part completed. The Rocky Reach facilities are expected to be completed next year, providing a more productive and efficient work environment for employees. So jumping down to the key changes from last year, I would say the most significant change from last year is the material that Steve went over on our hydro capability forecast. You might recall that we were shooting for 89% capability at the end of 2024. And with the current schedule we have on our projects, it looks like that's moving to the first quarter of 2025 if we can accomplish all that work. Last year, we were at about 68% of capability, and we're currently at about 77% of capability on our way up to that 89% point. Another big change is the large unit repairs. You might recall that we actually included the conversion from oil-filled hubs to water-filled hubs on C10 and 11, so we're excited about that. Getting started next year. We'll continue to put a lot of effort and attention towards independent operations of the hydro projects. I think most of our efforts as we put those new systems in place are going to be on the continuous improvement side of things. We're also recognizing that there's currently a fair amount of effort, and if there are additional large loads coming into the county, will be a significant increase in the workload on the transmission side of things. So that's one we're keeping a close eye on. And on the workforce side of things, we'll be working on recruiting those six new hydro mechanics that you've been supportive of to help out with the bow wave of hydro modernization and rehabilitation work over the planning horizon. The key risks that we see, obviously, COVID continues to be something we're having to adapt to. So we see that as something we'll continue to need to do. And then high volume of projects over the next few years to get over that bow wave there that was in that business planning slide that Steve showed over the next 2 to 3 years. Any unplanned generation outages, as scheduled out as we are, we're aware that any of those will potentially impact scheduled outages or outages that are currently scheduled as well. And then any storms or fires that could certainly impact the transmission system reliability and our work plan as well, having to respond to something of that nature. We hit on the new loads that might require interconnection, and then cybersecurity is something that we're constantly working on to improve our defenses on. With that, are there any questions for me?
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Kirk.
Thank you.
Commissioners, John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I'm up next. I'll follow a similar style that Kirk has done. But first off, you know, just want to point out how we bring value to our customers. One of the things that we pride ourselves in is to provide safe, economical, and reliable services through a number of departments. We're pretty diverse, from engineering to operations, customer service, outreach. Steve has mentioned this in his setup, but we're really on the cusp now of leveraging some of this technology, and I'll speak more to that as well as we look forward. My approach is I'm going to focus on those key district initiatives. I'm going to walk through those nine items and really kind of, again, focus on what do we see changes as we move into 22. The first one is the support for accelerating the fiber expansion. 21 was the first year where we took the fiber operations group under our wings and customer utilities. A lot of work was done. You'll hear more about this later, but significant make-ready work was put in, continues on as we speak. Going into 22, though, we're going to shift a bit. We will have a contractor on board going into the next couple years, and they will really be focused on the design for both fiber and electric, as well as then putting together bid packages to bring contractors in to, again, meet those remaining areas on the acceleration. We put a lot of our internal crews and support working that now. This will give us the opportunity to take those resources and shift more on the infill areas throughout the county where they're a bit more challenging, a bit more problematic. So, but again, we'll have more resources to support that. So that's what we anticipate over the next several years with fiber. On the customer technology, the big one is, of course, the advanced metering infrastructure. A lot of work's been done to get the contract in place. Things are moving as we speak. We can anticipate in 22 and beyond completing the system integration with the various technologies with the AMI head-end system. There's a change management component that goes along with this, a business readiness aspect, a proof of the pilot, so to speak. And then by the end of the year, we anticipate doing mass installations and then completing that project over the next year and a half. On the capital side, we've successfully completed the Holly Street substation and just about done with OMI. So that's moving us into the next substations, the North Shore up at Lake Chelan, as well as Leavenworth Bavarian. We will see construction activities starting to take place. In addition, we're also looking at the Wenatchee substation that we need to increase the capacity as well as refurbish it. So that project will initiate this year as well. And we always try to get ahead of where we see we need to go next. And looking at West Wenatchee, South County, making sure we have properties to consider. And so as we gear up for the next round of substations. In addition, we've had a line project on our plate. We're starting that now, and we will complete that. And that's the South Shore feeder to allow for more capacity on the South Shore, as well as reliability. Moving down into the achieving the quartile one reliability. You know, Steve spent quite a bit of time on that, but obviously it's still out there, and we've got an aggressive goal to get down to that 23 minutes over the time frame. We've done a lot of work when it comes to the vegetation management. The board has supported the increase in the budget, so we're seeing lots of good work there. But where we need to get after is some of the underground cable replacements. We've added dollars in our budget to accommodate a different approach. Again, looking at the potential contractor to do that. We've also put in a request for three more staff members on the line operations side to be dedicated to excavation and trenching, which is something that would support that effort as well. On the improve electric system safety and reliability, compliance, our two big efforts there really are around the small wire. We identified that several years. This is a small copper wire in our system, so we have aggressive goals to remove that over a 10-year period. We continue to have success and get those reductions, as well as adherence to the National Electric Safety Code. Again, as we do fiber expansion and rebuilds of our lines, that's a clear focus. And we also look forward, as Steve has mentioned, with the plans with Human Performance Initiative, partnering with our safety department. COVID's been a bit of a challenge and how we've been able to work through safety meetings and move in that direction with training, but we anticipate getting back to that. The wildfire risk, again, that was new this year. I think we learned an awful lot, the fire safety outage management, and anticipate expanding this and looking at some lessons learned and how we can improve that program. The next several, I'm going to shift gears, talk a little about water, wastewater issues. Shasta Water District, we've spent some time this year working with their leadership. We're moving forward. We've got a team assembled of internal stakeholders working with Shasta Water District. We're working through a number of issues, some things we've learned from like the Cashmere system areas we need to focus on, land rights, working with them on just transfer agreements and things of that nature. And if things work as we anticipate, we will probably see that happen later this year and start serving those customers in 22. The Dryden treatment plant, that's underway. We will be submitting engineering documents, and then over the next 2 years, the completion of that treatment plant. And then on the regional system, we've been working on this for a number of years. We've explored various ground source. We really wanted to find something on the Chelan County side for redundancy and reliability. Just haven't found that on the ground source, so now we're doing a feasibility with the support of some grant money to look at a surface treatment plant, maybe around the Malaga area. If that is deemed to be infeasible, we may have to go back to a ground source and most likely on the Douglas County side. That's not everything, but certainly really gives a pretty high-level overview of some of our key areas. Some of the unknowns. Steve had mentioned that, just and Kirk has too, you know, just the growth, the large growth. If we see those significant projects come in, we will have to adjust and react accordingly. The supply chain risk is something that, you know, from the distribution, water, AMI, all the technologies we're working on, we've actually are actively looking at strategies to mitigate that. We've got a task force that's been established and just trying to get ahead where we can. Good example would be transformers. That's one where, you know, we work through a lot of transformers, primarily the pad mounted, and those are proving really tough to get. So what can we do to find other alternative supply chains, just as an example? And one of the big things that I think is coming out of this and we're understanding, we rely a lot on contractors to support us with the aggressive plans that we have. You know, they require a support staff around them. We really look to areas in Justin's group, project management, PCS, real estate services, Eric as well from legal support. So just understanding that we're gonna put more strain on those groups. So how do we partner with them to ensure that we can move these forward? And I'll stop there if there's any questions.
John, this is Dennis, and I do have a question, and it relates back to the fire safety outage management process. Yeah, I think we've done a good job of getting ready there, but it's not foolproof. There is, let's say, a failure in that system, are we equivalently prepared for our legal defense related to that potential failure should it occur?
I may defer to Eric on some of this, but I would just say from what we're doing, we put a tremendous amount of resources and a lot of vegetation management. We continue both the transmission and distribution to paint poles and grub. The biggest thing we put in place, probably had the biggest impact, was the when we go into the fire season, disabling our reclosure system. So essentially you go on just a one shot and limits that exposure.
John, can I ask a question and dovetail on what Commissioner Boltz just was asking? And you said something that kind of caught my ear, and I think it makes perfect sense. And just so those who might listen to the recording later of this meeting, this is a system that's put in place primarily during the wildfire season. So during the winter months, the reclosure is not put in place. Is that correct?
That's correct. Generally, I'll just use this past year, it was probably right around early June, and then we just re-enabled the reclosers last week. So pretty much covered the summer months through the end of September. And, of course, it depends on what we're seeing. Sometimes we can have a pretty early summer, but generally it's over the summer months.
So those folks who might be trying to make preparations at home if they listen to this recording, really wouldn't have to be too concerned about this particular event occurring during the cold winter months.
Correct.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Just want to make sure we got that out there.
One other quick thought regarding Commissioner Bowles' comments. I think the key issue from my perspective, not as a trained lawyer on litigation risk, is that there was an awful lot of information that had been developed in the utility industry about wildfire risk and about how it was being managed in other utility service territories. And to not be cognizant of that and to not have a plan, I think was a significant concern in terms of litigation exposure. I think the fact that we have been learning from what others have been doing and have been taking action puts us in a better position to be able to defend about not having done anything.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I just, these suits that are that are showing up occurred in utilities previous to reparation. The potential coming out of those court cases are huge, not only for the organization, but for individuals in the organization. And, my thought is, are we in a position to be nimble enough to, respond to a legal need? What level of thinking have we gone through in preparation and anticipation of an event should it occur? So it's just kind of a what if type of question. Certainly not a challenge to the organization, from me personally, but just, where's our thinking? Where are we, preparing ourselves well? What does that total package of preparation look like? So that's just kind of the basis of the thought.
Yeah, Commissioner Eric, maybe I could help with that last piece and give you a sense of where we're engaging. So I would say that we are engaging at every opportunity that we can identify on the wildfire issues, and those issues can be, bucketed variously into areas of focus, one of which obviously you've heard a lot about here at the utility, which is the real world operational impacts of the wildfire risk and how we try to think about how we would prepare for a wildfire season, how we try to arm our operations folks, primarily in John's group, with the vegetation management responsibility, with the alternative tools in the toolbox that they can pull out and apply as necessary under the circumstances to try to decrease risk or respond on red flag days. You've heard a lot about that. We refer to that as the FSOM. That's really more of our local effort. I would say that our thinking continues to evolve like other utilities on that. We are constantly in a feedback loop with our customer owners, with our other utilities, with our operations staff, trying to get a sense for, you know, what we can do to add to our preparedness in case something like that happens. I would say we also continue to engage with the task force and advisory committee groups that have been established through legislation and various other means at the state level to think collectively about the challenges of wildfire and not only preparedness in an effort to prevent, but response once it occurs. So we are thinking collectively. WAPUTA is involved in many of those efforts. We have now grown that and expanded that effort at a state level to include other industry, I'll say representatives from the utility industry. That really means we're talking about not only the consumer-owned, but also the IOUs, the co-ops, the munis. All of those folks are thinking collectively with us now, in addition to the state agencies. There are some anecdotal stories that come out of other utilities having dealt with state agencies this past couple of years in wildfire situations that leads me to believe that we're actually making collective progress. I really am excited about that, although we'd like to see it quicker. And then I would say on the third bucket is really the, I'll say the legal liability, the response, investigation, causal analysis, the ability to defend and to try to establish what it really means to be negligent, which is still our standard here in Washington. It's a bit of a sliding negligence scale depending upon factors established mostly in case authority dealing with similarly situated utilities and what might be reasonable efforts under the circumstances. But we continue to try to accomplish, I would say, two objectives on the liability side. One, we certainly believe strongly that we want to maintain a system grounded in some traditional legal concepts like negligence or gross negligence or recklessness, as opposed to some of the more stricter liability analyses you see coming out of California and perhaps elsewhere. But we're also, in addition to trying to preserve and protect that, trying to actually work through that analysis and try to identify some what I'm going to call meaningful metrics that we can deliver to the operations folks so that they can go and implement those in the field and know that if they implement those things and take those actions that they have met that bar. Probably the greatest frustration in negligence cases, at least in my experience, and particularly in the one that we have in Washington, which is a bit of a sliding scale, is lawyers can argue a lot about that and whether the standard is met or not and what should or could have been done. That doesn't provide a lot of help to real-world circumstances, and you get the operations folks out there trying to maintain the safety and security of the bulk electric system. And if we can't find a way to give them measures that if they implement, they know that they are operating reasonably, I would argue that's really a failure on the part of those of us who get to talk about such things. Because I've never heard, honestly, our operations folks say that they couldn't do something or wouldn't do something. They're just looking for some guidance on what exactly those measures should be so that they can focus those efforts where they're appropriate and going to make some meaningful difference. So I would say that we engage nearly daily as a utility in all of those areas. Even 2 weeks ago, Katie Yunt here at the district and my staff gave a presentation to the PUD and Municipal Attorneys Association. We call it an association. It's a loose group of utility lawyers that meet twice a year. So she prepared and gave a pretty significant comprehensive presentation of what we had been through on the EFSON side and our efforts in wildfire, shared that with the rest of the attorneys who attended, and sort of facilitated the discussion, the sharing of information between those attorneys. So a lot happening. I expect a lot will happen. I'm certain we're not done with the effort, but we'll continue to support John's team and the other teams necessary to advance the proposition that we are committed to.
Eric, thanks. You covered a lot of ground there. And I'm also appreciative of the being proactive legislatively, taking a look at the potential of human error and creating liabilities. So you covered the waterfront nicely on there, and glad we're moving forward. Thanks for your response.
Yeah, happy to answer any other questions, commissioners. There's a whole team of people who are working on this with a lot more a daily attention than I am. So we can find answers if you need them.
Yeah. We're just in a different world right now.
Agreed.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Bob, you're on mute. There you go. Now you're off.
Can you hear me now okay?
Yep.
You're a little soft.
All right, I'll speak up a bit. Sorry, I'm talking through my iPhone. Commissioners, Bob Shane, Managing Director of the Fiber and Telecom Group. I'm going to start with a pretty high-level overview, but please ask questions as we go. Steve, Kirk, and John covered some of the things that I'll be talking about, so it should be more or less common knowledge at this point. I'll start out with how we bring value to our customer owners, and I'm going to pause for a second there. We really have two sets of customers. We have the internal district customers, which we serve through our telecom group, and then we have the larger external customers, which would be our customer owners. And I'll differentiate as we go through here, but primarily I'm speaking of our customer owners, the larger customers out that we bring broadband to. So our efforts, as they have been in the past, is to bring actionable focus on improving customer service, always looking to meet or exceed our customers' expectations. In most cases, we're working through our partnership with our service providers to get there. So it's definitely a cooperative relationship with all of our providers and making sure we understand what our customer owners want and making sure that we're doing our best to meet those expectations. And we meet that through a number of larger efforts that directly touch our customer owners. The biggest, of course, being the fiber expansion under the Public Power Benefit Program. Focus to reach 85% to 90% of the county by the end of 2026. And we continue to expand the fiber in the new areas of the county, which is part of the expansion, while we continue to fill in the areas within the county that don't have access for areas that we previously built around but not completed. This also includes growth in our new homes and businesses throughout the county. So overall, it's a pretty dynamic effort in trying to meet the overall expectations of the PPP program. The big one, the challenge of the county itself is growing. So what we had put together years ago is changing simply because the county is growing. And as it grows, we have to adapt to meet our 85-90% of the coverage. But we do see, continue to see a lot of support and a lot of anticipation from our customer owners to get our fiber out to those unserved areas. So we get positive confirmation from our customer owners that the PPP program is something that they all want and they will use. When I talked about the different ways we're meeting customers' needs, one is through the adoption of new and enhanced technologies. Obviously, we need to maintain and operate a very resilient and reliable network, and that adds to our competitive edge. So we're constantly adding capacity and capabilities to meet those customers' expectations. I think in the last board meeting, there was an update from Ron Auger, who's my admin engineer on the network, that talked about a layer two upgrade. And basically, the point I'm making there is we're constantly looking to see how we can grow our network so that it provides that resiliency and capacity for future needs. But we want to do that in a very cost balance with benefit. In other words, you can go out there and buy very high-tech technology to give you a lot of bandwidth, but you're going to be paying a premium for it. So we try to balance that in a reasonable way to meet overall expectations for both cost and performance. And ultimately, what that's going to do is provide our customers the capabilities of very, very high-speed services as the time goes on. Technically, we can serve 10 gigabits to the home right now, which is phenomenal. The demand's not there, but it's approaching. We're also looking to add some feature sets in our new fiber portal. You've heard us talk about that before. The bottom line there is we're looking to see how we can improve the overall end-to-end experience for our customer orders from the time that they place an order to the time it gets provision and services get turned up. So we are looking to see how we can take advantage of incremental changes in how we operate to provide better service to our customer owners. We're also looking at changing our internal practices aimed at customer care and service. And specifically what I'm talking about is truly understanding what the needs are of our customer owners. We do that now, but we have actually pushed it up a notch. We have a customer advocate person coming on that's added staff that really specifically spend time with our providers and customer owners to understand what they're experiencing out there, not only in services that they ask for us, but what are the competing alternative providers and other services they're needing that maybe we're coming up short on. So we're really trying to understand that. And part of that is also working with our service providers to get their perspective on that as well. Key changes from last year, I'm just going to highly quickly go over the acceleration of the fiber program that's been mentioned several times. So we are on track to get 1,500 homes passed by the end of 2024, although it's a challenge with resources. That's definitely a joint effort across many different business units to get that completed. Requires a lot of collaboration and planning. We continue to do that. There's also a very recent interest in federal and state to advance broadband to serve the unserved and underserved areas. To that end, there's funding opportunities that are being made available under very specific conditions and qualifications, and we are pursuing those where the opportunities look like we can meet those qualifications, and there's many out there. They're from both, as I mentioned, the state and federal. We're working with the state broadband office on state initiatives and programs to see if we can't find some funding for advancement of broadband. Some of the key goals and assumptions under the PPP program, we plan to pass the 5,800 by 2024. That's done through specifically building out the seven new areas in the county. Again, we call that expansion. We plan to meet and exceed the connection rate of 55% by 2024. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to beat that as early as the end of this year, possibly early next year. So we will want to reset that expectation, but that's very good that we've got there. We also continue with our 3% annual rate increase through 2024. And something we're very proud of and work very hard to is we want to maintain our reliable core network, targeting the 5.9 overall uptime. Actually, I think up to date, we're at 100%. Don't want to jinx that, but we've been doing very good at maintaining the core network. Some of the key variables, and I won't touch on all of them. A lot of them that I'm particularly watching for right now is the changing in the telecom market. We see some major environmental changes in the area of market competition and technologies. Right now, with the focus of broadband by the federal and state, there's a lot of funding being made available for qualified entities, including the Chelan PUD. But there are other broadband providers that will also qualify for those funds. So we will be looking for ways to create partnerships with other providers if they get funding to build out here in Chelan County so that we can bring the best value to our customer owners under a partnership program if that's possible. But at the same time, we want to maintain a strong competitive edge and provide the value and benefit to our customers. And it's through our actions and efforts that we keep that competitive edge, which is very important. And basically, those are measured in terms of rates that the customers, owners are willing to pay, the performance of the system and overall resiliency and speed, the service offering, that is what we provide to our customers, make sure it meets their needs. And the, probably the last one is the customer care. We want to make sure that we're providing quick response time to outages and installations for our customer owners to make sure that we maintain a competitive edge over what we might see by our competitors that would come into the valley and build in competition with us. Talk a little bit about district-supported priorities. Primarily, we're always focused on maintaining fiber solvency. So all of the things that I talked about makes the business unit successful, so we're constantly looking to make sure that we're meeting those expectations of our customer owners to bring revenue into the business unit, but most importantly, to meet the customer's expectations. Move down to the business operating key units. There's two there that I'd like to talk about. District internal connectivity requirements, that's something a little bit new. That's really on our telecom side. And what we're doing there is we're looking at developing a district-wide communication system that's based on wireless to provide some standard ways of way we operate our wireless systems. We currently have many, many different wireless solutions, all unique and different. With new licensing available for Spectrum, we're looking to see how we can provide an umbrella system that operates across the county to meet all of our needs in multiple different applications to lower our cost and increase our reliability. That's going to be a fairly large program. We're just in the investigation and feasibility part of it right now. But we're looking forward to developing a system that brings a lot of value to the district. And the last one would be the fiber business growth. Of course, that's always been on our radar, but with the competition and availability of funding and potential competitors coming into the area, we want to really make sure we understand the dynamics, the situation awareness around what those services are here in the county, who our players are, how we can develop partnerships where it makes sense, and otherwise increase our ability to be as competitive as possible through operating a system that's reliable and cost effective. So with that, I'll pause and see if there's any questions.
Commissioners?
Bob, yeah, I have a question. As we build out, we know that there's an increased cost per mile. Do we have an estimate on, as we continue to build out, you know, what is our cost per mile average for building out now? And then what do we anticipate that to be as we stretch, you know, our lines further and further? And I don't know if you have those numbers available or if you could have them available, but what do we anticipate the increased cost per mile as we reach out to our outmost customers?
Commissioner, that's a great question. I don't have the specific numbers, but it is something I can get you. In our modeling, we automatically put into our forecast cost increase in materials and labor. And so we anticipate that that is in our forecast and is within the scope of meeting the expectations as we go forward. So I can get that information. The cost is going up, and it's going up for reasons that you would anticipate, just the normal increase in material and labor rates. The distance is a bit of a challenge, but again, we've already anticipated that in our broadband build out, knowing that we're going to go to some more remote areas. And so that cost per mile, we actually break it down. Cost per premises is calculated and in our model, so I can certainly provide that to you.
Okay, and I appreciate that, because as we anticipate our public benefit dollars, you know, I think as a commissioner, I want to be able to be intellectually prepared to support that build out, but I would feel comfortable. I'm more comfortable knowing at least some idea what, I may advocating, you know, for build out of fiber or other project or projects. So that would help me clarify some thinking.
Okay. So the other thing to mention is, as we build out, some of our growth, we were trying to get that 85-90% of the county. Some of that growth is happening actually in the cities and in the towns. And so it's actually cost effective to build out some of those areas that are growing as part of the county growth. So there's kind of a checks and balances on the overall cost that helps us manage this out.
Okay. Thank you.
Bob, any other questions?
I have a question for Bob. Bob, as we've had presentations earlier this morning already talking about the South County and potential growth spurts that might be occurring. How is the fiber network looking down in the South County? Are we going to have to push more fiber down there to accommodate some of this potential growth?
That's a great question. So we've been approached by some of the infrastructure builders in that area that are willing to pay for the infrastructure build that's necessary to support their business needs. Generically and in a large scale, we have a lot of fiber into that area. That's where our backbone fiber goes. and we have some distribution fiber. So we're actually well positioned to absorb a lot of different fiber traffic down in that area. But if there was a need for specific routes that a client would want, typically there's an aid in construction where that is paid to provide that support. But we are really in good shape overall.
Great. It's good to hear. Thanks, Bob.
So, Bob, just anecdotally, you mentioned you might, by the end of the year, be beyond the 55% take rate. It wouldn't surprise me if it happened last week with the decision of Dish Network to drop Root Sports when the Mariners were making their playoff push, and probably a lot of people called and wanted to change providers.
There's a lot of that we're seeing that does really drive that take rate up. But ideally, or I think specifically, we have a really reliable and a heck of a good system, and that's what's getting customers who want to come over onto our network. Yeah. So, I think there are incidents like that where there's a change, but generally I like to think it's because we maintain and operate a darn reliable network.
Well, and I can remember not too many years ago when we were just really trying to get beyond 35% take, and to have us talking that we're at 55 now, we're going definitely the right direction.
We certainly are. We have some areas that have take rates that are in excess of 80% or more. So there are pockets within the county where we're getting a very strong take rate. But overall, we're running close to 55%.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources. If you scroll down a little bit, Rebecca, we're going to start with key changes from last year and focus there for a little bit here. For 22, we're going to continue to support the goals and objectives of the strategic plan. On the optimizing the wholesale portfolio, we really look to analytics and market intelligence and marketing to increase the predictability and also enhance the predictability of revenue for the district. We also know, we've been talking about this, there's evolving markets in the West, and we want to make sure both in power and environmental, and we want to anticipate, monitor, and influence those. Finally, we want to adapt our products and services with these changes in the market and make sure we're serving our customers and our wholesale purchasers. You've heard a little bit about the longer-term marketing plan. That's, you know, a lot of that occurs in my group, and we're going to continue to pursue and enhance that area. Also, large loads, we'll be looking to that to further evaluate and promoting, as we talked about earlier. With our IT system, we'll want to continue to work on improving that, to continue to improve on the independent operations. And further, we're going to need to contract in the Mid-C and PUD with BPA's program because we have that 2024 deadline. Customer energy solutions, we look to implement the low-income EE program and also investigate demand response programs. If we slide down a little bit with key variables, we have some counteracting forces in energy prices. We've talked about, you know, short term, we've had increased load growth locally. However, when you look across the West, there has been little to no load growth with increased renewable resources, which is putting pressure, basically downward pressure, longer term on pricing. On the other side, we've got CETA and Cap and Invest and other regulatory items that are pushing prices higher. So, and additionally, we're having federal infrastructure dollars potentially coming into play. So there's this push-pull that we'll need to continue to monitor as prices could go up and down. The trends continue with regional markets, with EDAM, EIM, and regional transmission organization talk throughout the throughout the region. Locally, we've got customer adoption rates, EVs, although they haven't taken off recently. You've seen EV trucks starting to come off the production line, and looking further out into the future, a lot more trucks, among many other variety of models for the EV area. In new technologies, we also have AMI that would impact our Customer Energy Solutions group that John spoke about, along with water heaters and thermostats that are controllable. Resource adequacy market was touched upon, which is changing the capacity market, so we'll continue to look at that. Some of the projects, if we scroll up to the top, what we're looking to do is we're going to assess the value of a distributed energy management system. And what that does basically is, as RA energy efficiency and EV charging all sort of start to come together, we're able to potentially reduce peak loads through these automated systems. So we'll be taking on that to test that system out. A couple of the items within the CAISO is we're looking at EDAM and other proceedings within California ISO market. And we want to continue to monitor the RTO transformation in the area. Nothing's out there yet, but there is a lot of chatter. We want to continue to push for independent governance for our area, proper pricing and valuation for hydro, because it's a flexible, renewable resource, which is very important that we get that pricing right to get our full value. And then finally, impacts the mid-sea pricing. We look to continue to promote Northwest capacity value. Just last week, we along with 17 other utilities have committed to the Northwest Power Pool Resource Adequacy Program. So that's a non-binding forward showing program that will go through December 2022. And we look forward for a success, and then a binding forward showing program will start in 2024. On implementing the long-term marketing plan, we continue discussing contracts, and we look for that to proceed into 2022 and beyond. On the two dam independent operations, we have completed phase one, and phase two will start next year. Further, we'll continue to make improvements in our accounting system to offer more flexibility for our power purchasers. The Columbia River Treaty renegotiation of the CEAA, we need to complete before the end of 2023, and we've started to have very early discussions there, but a lot of work to do over the next 2 years. CETA implementation is a very hot topic. It is basically being worked on by the UTC and Commerce, and we expect draft rules soon. We will continue to monitor the program and adjust marketing opportunities as appropriate. Finally, we'll have to file our clean energy implementation plan before the end of the year, and we'll continue to monitor our CETA compliance. In our customer energy program, we're going to implement our low-income efficiency program, which was approved by the board, and that will begin in 2022. Just to add that if you look at the top line there, we'll continue to optimize the whole solar portfolio for our customer owners and enhance the revenue and the experience in supporting our district. That's my update. If there are any questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
I'd like to ask a question if I can.
Sure. And
this is really more of an educational question. I've been reading a lot about natural gas currently. Seems that market's a little bit in turmoil. Can you talk about that just for a second, and is that impacting us at all?
There's always a strong correlation between natural gas prices and prices of energy on the West Coast, especially, you know, every afternoon that the sun starts to go down, basically gas peaker units need to start up. So when prices of natural gas go up, inevitably the price of electricity goes up. So it's a positive for us because the prices overall are going up. In terms of the reasons for that, there is some issues down at Henry Hub in Louisiana, right, with the hurricane that affected production that impacted that. There's also some Aliso Canyon issues down in Southern California that impacted pricing on a Western region scale. So some supply-demand issues, basically, causing pricing to spike.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. It's a pleasure to share an overview of the District Services Operating Unit Plan with you. I'm Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. I'm going to start right at the top in terms of how we will add value for our customer owners. District Services team is a diverse group, and we're dedicated to enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County in some key ways, including fully leveraging the value of the district's assets, protecting natural resources entrusted to us, providing high-quality recreational experiences, and promoting policies that benefit our customer owners. Our primary mission is supporting operations and the successful delivery of our utility services. Some key changes from last year. Rock Island relicensing is moving from the planning phase and into the hard work of preparing to submit an application to file. And so as part of that work, we've got a really excellent internal and external project team committed to a process that is consistent with our values and our approach to stakeholder engagement. And that's centered on trust, open listening, inclusiveness, and building even stronger relationships than we already have today, which, of course, are quite positive. So you'll see stakeholder engagement wrapping up measurably towards the end of this year and into 2022, certainly. Another key change is the public power benefit solicitation effort that is underway and that Steve noted earlier. We're excited about looking at a new slate of projects that are forthcoming. We've already had about 10 formal submittals so far, and we will be actively soliciting more in the coming weeks and look forward to checking in with you later this year. In addition to the PPB efforts, we have implementation activities associated with early action project studies that we'll also be bringing before you soon. And with all of those efforts, we've got great community relations today, but we've got the opportunity to build even stronger ties through the public power benefit process, relicensing, early action, and other opportunities for public engagement. Some key variables that we have to consider: constantly changing political and regulatory landscape, and emerging issues. Just when you think you know where things are at, something else comes up. And so we've got to be nimble. Impacts of hydro licensing reform legislation. I'm particularly interested in ways to make the relicensing process streamlined and more efficient. And lastly, additional support requirements for business units for procurement, project management, engineering, real estate services, et cetera. Appreciate the comments from John Stoll earlier, and he alluded to that need. And so as you've seen in this in these presentations, there's a tremendous amount of excellent projects that are needed, that bring value, but it's a significant workload, and so that volume is a key variable. So we will ensure in District Services that we are focused on the highest priorities and on realizing efficiencies so we can accomplish as much as possible while still maintaining very high quality work. So key initiatives and actions, there's a variety of items listed there, some of which you've heard about already, or perhaps I just mentioned them in some context. So I will I'll just summarize and highlight just a few of these. Number one, we're going to execute on the facilities projects. Steve noted this as well, but I think it's important to highlight again that we've got Rock Island completed, Rocky Reach, the Discovery Center open, Rocky Reach remaining efforts in 2022, and then of course the Service Center coming online sort of incrementally in late 2022 and into early 2023. These new facilities will allow us to achieve significant efficiency gains, cost savings, and also provide work culture enhancements. And I think about the new strategic objective about fostering a culture of serving the public interest. And so when I think about these new facilities, I think about how we can help amplify that new objective. Second, support the district-wide priority of achieving a first quartile status in hydro capability, distribution reliability, and in meeting the fiber expansion and acceleration targets. So those three efforts in particular, we're going to be laser focused on. And in order to do all of the slate of our work and best support all of the business units, we're going to need to continue to create contracting, construction, and procurement efficiencies through our continued effort related to internal process improvements, alternative contracting processes, and other efforts. We got to continue to serve internal customers better, faster, and build dynamic and collaborative relationships. So in conclusion, the district services team, which totals around 240 individuals, looks forward to implementation of the business plan and the district strategic plan. We appreciate the support of the board and the general manager. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions, commissioners? Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. I just want to start off, in today's world, the strategic use of technology is becoming sort of key to unlock our full potential of knowledge, growth, and efficiencies. If you've read the industry, Forbes has actually pointed out today, no company can make, deliver, or market its products efficiently without technology. And the Boston Consulting Group has declared that companies from all industries, you know, need to move into the technology sector. And today's company really is a technology company because technology touches every aspect of our lives. Chelan County PUD is no different. And as you've heard from a lot of the previous presentations by the other managing directors, there's technology in a lot of their strategic portfolios that they're looking to do. We're now on a technology innovation journey that will bring us and our products and services to an industry-leading level. The IT department is going through an incredible transformation. So by aligning the district's mission and the strategy set by the board, the IT department is shifting towards a new way of thinking and a new way of working. You heard that from Steve in his presentation. And this will elevate Chelan County PUD to become an innovative leader. Some of our key changes from last year start with this change in strategy. From what software tools do we need to what customer value should be delivered? So we're really starting to focus on customer value instead of actually technology, and really how technology can help us achieve that value. So by shifting to a value mindset, we can unlock the true desires of our customers, we can deliver quick to market services, and we can improve the ability to iteratively improve through that constant feedback. As you saw on Steve's slide with the value, you know, many of these values that we aim to deliver to our customers include viewing outage data on Chelan County PUD's website in early 2022. We'd like to provide prepay options in a customer engagement portal, access to account information through a simple mobile app, provide potential service order tracking, and even customer self-service provisioning. The IT reorganization is designed to set the district up to deliver on this value. We are moving from a functional, siloed, specialized mindset to an agile one. We are shifting from solely keeping the lights on to allocating resources to develop core customer values. And this is not an easy shift, as it will require additional training and knowledge transfer to ensure we are robust enough to grow. We'll take two steps back initially, but we will leap three steps forward to begin to deliver on this value. Adding a new CTO raises the strategic presence of technology and innovation throughout the organization. A new set of IT managers allows new ideas and creativity to flow. And a new renewed focus on cybersecurity allows for an offensive mindset to this threat and a cultural change in how we defend our systems and our customer data. We are moving from what we define as context work to core work. It is important to remove such much of our technical debt, which are decisions and technology that end up causing more work in the future for the quick gains today. So our philosophy really going forward is to reduce this debt through an idea of condense, collapse, and simplify our systems and our technology so we can free up the resources to work on the innovative core technologies our customers desire. The department has been very successful in getting some large initiatives completed this year as well. With this change, and we've actually started up and near completed a few others. So for our external customers, we've completed the CIS stability project well in time for many dependent projects like AMI and OMS. We are still on track to go live to provide customers the ability to view outage information on the web and have begun the development of our AMI system. This is an enabler to our customers' ability to track their usage and potentially prepay in the future. Internally, we pushed out new collaboration tools. One of them we're using today in Microsoft Teams. We've improved our communication and sharing abilities among our staff. We provided new tools to track API metrics, which just has started to go live last week, and provided yet a simplified yet powerful learning module to allow our staff to train in a much more effective way than we've had in the past. We're going to continue to deliver on technology next year as we're focused on delivering more value. We'll begin to look for technology that will provide our customers a window into the relationship with the utility, either via web or mobile. We'll begin to looking for technologies that can provide enhancements, efficiencies, and improved data communications with our field crews. And lastly, we'll begin to focus more on providing the right data at the right time to our internal customers through advanced analytics and self-service reporting. You know, the right data at the right time to make the right decisions. Change is hard. It takes time. It comes with its own challenges. We have certain key variables that we should be watchful for. Shifting our focus from the context to core values requires a reskilling of some of our workforce. Our IT staff levels continue to be stretched as we move more employees to start delivering on innovation with less available to maintain existing systems. And competition for IT talent is fierce and is a challenge that we must be creative to overcome. Finally, COVID still challenges our department and our ability to work collaboratively closely to stir the innovative ideas that are critical to our success. Looking at our goals and objectives, a lot of these projects are designed to support these new initiatives, this new way of thinking, this new way of working. To call out quickly on some of these, we're looking at doing a design and governance of all technology across the district and bring them under a single way of working so that we can effectively collaborate with everybody within the district. We're looking at strengthening our cybersecurity, again, as mentioned, to improve our defenses by actually taking a new way of looking at it and going on the offense. We're working at the technology roadmaps, but flipping that, instead of just looking at technology, again, we're looking at value to figure out what technology can present. And the biggest thing next year is really participating in the service center move and making sure technology is ready and available when we're all ready to move into that technology center. To say the least, it's been a fun and very eventful 2021. I've really enjoyed actually coming on board SLAM PUD and being part of this family. And I have high expectations of what we can accomplish both next year and the next 5 years under Kirk's new leadership. So thank you for allowing me the time to present this update. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Commissioners, any questions?
I just like to comment, Ian. It's exciting to hear you talk about the focus on the customer. But I'm probably not one of the guys that's going to use an app on my phone to get back and connect with what I'm doing electrically. But I know my kids are doing that right now, and I know that this is a generational thing. And it excites me that we're stepping up to meet the needs of the new and emerging public and meet them where they are. And you're right in the middle of that.
Thanks, Commissioner. And the truth is, you might not think you will use these tools, but you might use some of them, and they might help you. So,
yeah, oh, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. You know, old dogs learn slowly, though. That's Commissioners, it's about 4 minutes. And if my rough math is correct, I think we probably still have another four senior managers to hear from a little bit. I'd like to suggest that we take a break for lunch and pick the rest of these reports back up at 1 o'clock. Does that meet with the approval of the rest of you?
Yes, sounds good.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. Good idea. And if there's any public out there that want to comment right now, I made a promise at the end of this. So if there's any public comment at this moment, I'd be willing to hear it. Hearing none, we'll recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome to the afternoon business session of the October 4, 2021 meeting of Chelan County Public Utility District Commissioners. We met this morning in study session. We started with our outline of the five-year business plan. We're not able to complete that in the morning session and anticipate picking up right now where we left off with the managing directors making their presentations. So I will hand it off to Steve Wright.
And I'm going to hand it off to Rhonda Wilkinson because we're ready to move into safety and HPI business plan.
Wonderful. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety and Human Performance. So I do appreciate being here and being able to share with you how the safety department is going to make a difference and help the district achieve our safety and HPI goals over the next 5 years. So the majority of this really falls into two very large buckets: implementing our plan to achieve top quartile in safety and also executing on the HPI roadmap to continue our HPI journey. So our goals with these plans are to eliminate any potential for having significant life-changing injuries and illnesses or incidents, as well as promote an environment for engaged and empowered employees to help us continuously improve our operational processes and also improve our safety management system. So some of the key changes from last year, really there's been a lot of work put towards finalizing that safety top quartile plan and the HPI roadmap. So one of the key changes is the implementation of those finalized plans. To achieve top quartile and to ensure that we continue down our HPI path, our approach is to partner with the BUs every year to set up very specific safety and HPI objectives and actions for them to incorporate into their own business plans. So some of these objectives will be based off the injuries and significant incident trends specific to their areas. And as each program in the district safety management system is being evaluated, this is like all of our governance programs, the safety, the health, and the industrial hygiene programs. Any opportunities or gaps that we identify will also be included in each of those BU objectives or in their plans. So regarding best practices, we currently have best practices in pockets across the district, and so we will work towards implementing those best practices district-wide to help create consistency and standardization. And we are also going to be working with outside agencies to evaluate other best practices. And then also each year, we're going to evaluate our leading indicators and determine which of those indicators are really best suited for the district to help us continually improve in the lagging indicators that we monitor. Some of those lagging indicators are such as our incident rates. And in regards to the last bullet, the safety department will continue to support and lead where needed in the planning in response to COVID to keep our employees, the public, contractors, and visitors safe. So moving down to key variables, you know, I probably could have gotten this presentation done in that 4 minutes that we had left. The key variables, so the known unknowns going forward. So as previously discussed by most are the impacts from COVID. Safety and others have allocated a great amount of time to COVID. So depending on how this pandemic really continues, it will dictate the amount of time and resources needed to support the district. And as COVID changes, our work requirements and our practices may change to incorporate those ever-changing state and federal guidelines. So depending on those changes, we will have to keep observing for changing safety conditions and ensure that we implement safe work practices for those changes. So the next bullet is that the safety department really consists of safety, human performance, industrial hygiene, contractor safety, and workers' compensation. So there are 13 employees in the safety department, including myself, and three of those positions are currently vacant. So the struggle here is really to try to find highly qualified applicants to fill those three positions and help the district move forward with safety and human performance. And so once those positions are filled, as we all know, it takes time to get those employees onboarded and trained. And then another variable is that last bullet. And so since I have started at the PUD, it hasn't been quite 10 months. One thing that I have noticed across the district, and you have heard throughout this presentation, is that we take on a lot of projects and objectives to help with upgrades, continual process improvement, operational excellence, and so on. And so safety's challenge is to continue working with those BUs, continue working with the BUs to ensure safety and HPI remain a priority during all phases of all of those projects. And that's all I have for you today. Do you have any questions for me?
Commissioners, any questions? So I've got one, and maybe it's, I'm trying to refresh my memory. Our goal is to achieve the upper quartile. What measuring standard are we using to achieve that upper? I mean, what are the metrics for an upper quartile? Not the detail, but we have some index that's out there in the industry for best standards?
Yes, that's a great question, Commissioner. Thank you for asking that. Yes, we use APPA. There's 15 businesses that we use through APPA. We take a look at them in each year, wherever they land with their incident rates is what we use for our metrics. So our goal is to land in that top quartile of all of those 15. So we have we definitely have a challenge there, and it's a good challenge. It just keeps us moving forward and keeping that needle moving in the direction that we need to go.
And where do we currently land, approximately?
We are in the lower level right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it's a highly worthy goal. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. We definitely will get there.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Rosario Nystrom, and I'm the new Managing Director of Human Resources. HR supports the district goals and operations by attracting and hiring the best and most qualified talent. We work with business units to communicate our mission and motivate employees. We also support employees and business units with developing opportunities for individual mastery and operational excellence. And most importantly, we keep the district safe by ensuring compliance and regulation. Some key changes from last year, we continue to adapt work practices and guidelines for increased flexibility, adaptability, and resiliency to external forces such as the challenges presented by the pandemic. We continue to implement policy changes to comply with new legislation and changes to the law. And we continue to implement our top three healthcare plans to mitigate the healthcare costs. Some key variables disruption to work and how it is performed. The pandemic brought rapid changes to our work dynamics. HR partnered with business units and the union to respond rapidly and efficiently to the changes, and we expect that we will continue to respond to COVID and other challenges beyond 2022. Legislators and the court continue to create new mandates, regulations, and laws that will impact us in ways that are difficult to predict. And market trends for wages and employee benefits, more than ever, it is very difficult to predict trends, especially when it comes to cost and related impacts of the pandemic. And finding and hiring available and skilled workers for mission-critical positions, more than ever, we are experiencing challenges when it comes to finding and attracting skilled talent. This presents significant issues and impacts to our organization. And as we move forward, we are focused in targeting passive talent pools by utilizing all available recruitment platforms, by creating an employee value proposition that attracts the most qualified talent, and by continuing to identify and correct recruitment process inefficiencies. With the continued employee retirements that we're facing, we have the potential of loss of tacit and institutional knowledge. And to be able to mitigate this impact, we continue to focus on building talent pipelines and preparing the current workforce to be ready for the future needs of the organization. Generational and cultural differences will also impact our workforce in ways that are hard to predict. More specifically, it is difficult to find a balance between an employee's desire for scheduling, location, flexibility, and remote work preferences, while also meeting the needs of the district. Our continued priorities for 2022 will be to do our best to continue to influence the actions of legislators by providing meaningful input to the rulemaking process. We will continue to engage in collective bargaining negotiations that support the district needs and also preserve our relationship with the union. And we will continue to focus on developing employee skills by identifying and providing access to job-specific sets of development opportunities for each job group. We will also continue to implement our 5-year leadership development program for executives and emerging leaders. We will also continue to support business units by providing guidance, developing and embracing goals to increase diversity in the work groups. And finally, we will continue to implement our 3 top healthcare innovation strategies, which include centers of excellence, prescription rebate programs, and tiered rates in order to mitigate the healthcare cost. At this time, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Well, Rosario, welcome aboard, first of all. Welcome.
Thank you.
To the team.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Yeah. I do have a question. We saw, and it may be early enough in your tenure that you have to hand it off to somebody else, and I'll understand if you do, on a judgment scale. But last year it appeared that we had a small increase, or maybe a significant increase, in the number of retirements, and, you can think of it as maybe it was COVID caused, or maybe it was the front edge of the boomers finally starting to retire in larger numbers. I don't know if you have been here long enough to get your arms around those numbers yet or not.
Yes, we are reviewing those numbers on a monthly basis. As of today, year to date, we've had 31 retirements. Well, 31 separations, and I want to say that maybe like 95% of those are retirements.
So that's pretty significant.
Yes, especially because most of those retirements, those employees have been with the district for a very long time. So they do have valuable institutional knowledge and skills that are not going to be very easy to replace.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, any other questions? Thank you, Rosario. Oh, here's one.
Thank you, Randy. Rosario, I echo Commissioner Smith's welcome aboard. Glad to have you here. And I have a question with respect to the loss of that institutional knowledge. Do you envision or are you aware of a training mechanism that might be put in place to help capture some of that knowledge before it's lost?
We're working on that, and I think part of that effort is sometimes if we're able to provide maybe a part-time opportunity for the leader or the individual that is basically retiring prior to that person retiring, there's a gap, there's an overlap that we can offer, and then we're able to train and transfer that knowledge and experience to the emerging leaders. I think we're also working on a pretty robust leadership training plan that we have. It's a 5-year plan where we're working with emerging leaders and giving them the skills and the abilities that they need to be able to take the positions that will come open in the future.
Well, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, once again, thank you, Rosario.
Thank you so much for your time. Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, commissioners. This is Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And the Finance Business Unit will make a difference for our customer owners through prudent financial discipline to maintain our strong financial health and continue to advance our district-wide capabilities for risk-assessed and data-driven decision-making. One of the benefits of going later in the presentation like this is that I get the opportunity to connect the key changes and variables that you've been hearing from others to their financial impacts. And the key items that are being shared today impact both sides of the financial equation. The revenue opportunities that you're hearing about through the changes in the power markets and large load potential and growth are on the other side of the equation, have the expense side items like the planning for hydro modernization and the electric infrastructure changes, as well as changing regulations and the key projects like the hardening of our system against wildfire and our technology innovations. So we continually strive through all of this to anticipate and find the right balance between revenue and expense drivers for a balanced bottom line approach and the preservation of our financial resiliency. We are also focusing on key initiatives to advance our district-wide data analytics capabilities and tools to turn all this new and growing data into knowledge and predictive analytics rather than just a whole lot more numbers. And we will also emphasize our mindset of continuous improvement in our core financial responsibilities that culminate in our high bond ratings and clean financial audits. So I'll pause there for any questions for me.
Commissioners, any questions? Clear as usual, Kelly.
Thank you.
All right, commissioners, Eric Walquist here, District General Counsel. I think one of the benefits for you all of them putting me at the end is they only give me 30 seconds to do my whole plan. Actually, that's probably not true. They've given me 2 minutes, maybe. You've heard a lot of the challenges expressed by the other operating groups and business units in terms of what we have experienced this past year or so in terms of key variables and known unknowns. Mostly those have been the ever-increasing regulatory environment, the increasing project list, and, of course, the COVID parameters that we've been forced to sort of find our way through. The Legal Audit and Compliance Group, we exist primarily, commissioners, as you know, to support the other operating groups in achieving their business plans for the year, and we also manage the district's legal affairs. And very proud of the legal audit and compliance staff that we've built. We've done a really nice job of separating primary areas of responsibility. We'll continue that into the future years. We've developed a really nice way of providing backup support to one another. That has been very successful in ensuring, primarily over COVID, that we've been able to provide the needs to support the other operating groups. We're going to continue to support all of those efforts that you've heard about today. We will certainly continue to manage any necessary legal risks or challenges that come at the district and continue to support the operating groups and their efforts to respond successfully to those challenges. I would expect we will continue to support the primary efforts of the district into the next year. When I think of those in roughly, actually, this order of priority for me, I think of the marketing program support, and you've heard a lot about our updates to that plan and our thinking about how to continue to secure those important revenues to the future. We will continue to support that effort into the coming year. You've heard already today about the efforts and resources that we've been pouring into repairing and rehabilitating our generator fleet. We are certainly involved in all of those efforts and will continue to be so. We have talked a lot in the last couple of years and will continue to focus on the fiber acceleration and the distribution reliability. And then we continue to develop and explore new opportunities on the procurement side of things. And so we will continue, given the increasing number of projects and the increasing regulatory requirements that we're compelled to respond to. We'll continue to find creative and efficient ways to respond to those procurements. It's always a bit of a challenge for the district to procure all of this stuff and the resources that it needs to get all of these projects across the finish line, but we've been really successful thinking as a team here in how we can take advantage of some of those new alternative procurement methodologies and some of the flexibility given within the procurement rules to really try to squeeze efficiencies out of the procurement and contracting process. Really proud to partner in that group with Justin Erickson's team there in district services with EP&T as well as procurement contracting services. So we've been at that effort for years. I think we have made good progress, but there's still a ways to go. So we'll be continuing to manage all of those efforts into the next year and look forward to having this conversation with you all next year and celebrating what we're able to accomplish and looking forward to new challenges on the horizon. But happy to answer any questions that the commissioners have or tackle anything else at all you think is appropriate at the moment.
Commissioners, any questions? Well, I guess I'm obligated to ask at least one question. Looking back at the top of your grid, the first item on it was the Columbia River Treaty. And I noted that you ended any sponsor participation in that post-2024. Realistically, are we expecting closure by that time?
Well, I think that the part on my matrix that effort is intended to represent on my one-pager, Commissioner, is primarily supporting the efforts not only with respect to termination or renegotiation of the treaty, but also to continue assessing the legal issues and contract issues associated with continuing any active participation that we might have in that process as one of the non-federal partners on the river. The reason that the 2024 year is checked on that is because our present Columbia River, Canadian, CEAEA is how I think of it. To be honest with you, I can't remember off the top of my head what that thing's. I think it's the Canadian Allocation.
Canadian Entitlement Allocation.
Yeah, there you go. Canadian Entitlement Allocation Extension Agreement. So our second agreement signed back in 1997. That ends in 2024, concurrent with the treaty's anticipated first termination availability date. So we are looking at what a new treaty might look like, trying to negotiate and translate that with our other federal and non-federal partners into what might be a replacement or new Canadian entitlement allocation agreement going forward after 2024. I don't expect that there will not be work after 2024 to succinctly answer your question.
Okay. I was hoping you would answer it the other way, that you were hoping to have it all wrapped up.
Yes, yes. Well, we've talked many times about trying to get Steve to be contractually obligated to stick around until he resolves the Columbia River Treaty, but
he doesn't want to work that many years.
It could be a while.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions? Thank you, Eric.
You bet.
Okay, with that, commissioners, we're done with moving through the operating unit business plans. So just to summarize, the plans do support the 2020 to 24 strategic plan with some additions like the long-term marketing strategy, the things that have come up since we put that plan together. Next steps, board feedback this week, if you could get to us to keep us on schedule. We'd appreciate it if there's anything that you want us to be aware of. We want to finalize the business plans as part of our report to the board on Q3 issues. And then we'll be transitioning to the one-year 2022 budget by the next board meeting on October 18th in a schedule that I'm guessing that you're all pretty familiar with by now. So with that, just ask if there are any final questions before we close this portion of the morning session.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Steve. Very thorough job. Gives us something to really look at, and we will take seriously your request if there's any feedback to get it to you within the next week.
Thank you.
Commissioners, moving on now into our afternoon business session. The first item on the agenda is our consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I would make such a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Now we're on to the regular agenda, and we have a make ready budget revision, and I believe Lindsay Moens is going to make a presentation.
Good afternoon, commissioners. This is Lindsay Moens, business manager in customer utilities. This budget revision or proposed motion that you have before you today is a result of some additional work that was identified in the Chumstick area associated with the fiber build-out make-ready projects. So adding some additional customers or making fiber available for those additional customers. Where the design estimate for this work is about $130,000. So that is the request to be added to the build-out make-ready work. And that is for that make-ready work is the work that's required on the distribution system itself, on the electric system, in order to make those poles stable and sustainable for adding fiber to the facilities. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
So hearing no questions, commissioners, is there a motion? Would somebody care to make the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the budget revision as proposed.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded that the motion to approve the budget revision be approved. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager item.
To have a couple today, I want to ask Aline Underwood if she could provide an update on the HCP survival study.
Yes, happy to do so. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Aline Underwood, Fish and Wildlife Manager for the district. As you know, the district conducted a yearling Chinook survival study at Rock Island Project this spring. The study is required every 10 years to ensure that juvenile survival metrics through our project continue to be met. A 93% juvenile standard is required. The project is measured, just as a reminder, from the tail race of Rocky Reach Dam to 1,000 feet below the Rock Island Dam. So it includes the concrete and the reservoir. I am very pleased to report that the district successfully met our juvenile standard with a final result of 94.45%. This is in line with previous year studies. Additionally, the gold standard, what we call the gold standard, of the combined adult and juvenile standard, which is 91%, is also 94.45%, since the adult conversion rate of adult spring Chinook was 100%. So essentially what we mean by conversion rate is we detected 106 fish that we detected at Priest Rapids, and all 106 of those were subsequently detected at Rocky Reach. So now we're set for another 10 years at Rock Island, and we will continue with the next confirmation study at Rocky Reach in 2023. Any questions?
That is great news.
Yeah, just congratulations. That's amazing. 94.45%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the remaining 100% is made up with tributary work and hatchery work, correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was certainly an effort by so many individuals, all the folks that work at Rock Island, our consultant staff, our fish and wildlife staff, seasonals, biologists, everyone. So kudos go to them for sure.
And I want to say thanks to Aline. She actually took on an assignment last year to do work as superintendent at Rocky Reach. It created a whole lot of new relationships, a lot of understanding about how things actually work down there that made things work a lot better going through the survival study. So, Aline, nice job.
Thank you.
What did you say the assignment was last year?
Go ahead, Aline, you describe it.
Yeah, I actually filled in as the interim maintenance superintendent at Rocky Reach, and so after Mike Simpson's retirement. So I did that for 5 months while still doing the Fish and Wildlife Manager. And so that really helped to understand better about how each project is coordinated, how we leverage resources between each project, both with plant staff and central maintenance staff. So really fantastic opportunity to build some great relationships.
Cool. Very neat.
Yes. Thank you.
So
go ahead, Commissioner.
No, you go ahead. I'll follow.
I was just going to say I might add, it was very helpful for the operations team to have Aline's expertise, but she also did a fantastic job as that interim superintendent. She really did. We appreciate her help there during that time frame.
Thank you.
Many, many, many multitasking, right?
Yes.
You must be good at that. So while I have you on, I have a question.
Yes.
I think the other commissioners know that on the tour of the new Discovery Center, I was lucky enough to see a lamprey sucked up against the glass down there in the viewing room, which was amazing. So my question is, and I should know this, but What is the value of the lamprey to the tribes? I mean, other than historical.
Well, frankly, the historical context is really quite important. So lamprey are historically used for a food fish for medicinal purposes. They're very sacred to the tribes in terms of their long prehistoric tenure in the river. So very heightened awareness of how the lamprey are doing and of the utmost importance to the tribes.
But they do prey on the salmon, certain salmon species, correct?
Actually, no, they don't prey on the salmon. What's really interesting, and I don't know if anyone's had an opportunity to see one in the window, is lamprey have a parasitic relationship with salmon. So as juveniles, they outmigrate to the ocean. while they're in the ocean, they find a host to attach to. So sometimes you'll see salmon return that actually have a circular wound or circular scar on them. That's because they're parasitic in the ocean, and they have this symbiotic relationship. As the fish swim all over wherever they're going, they detach from the adult and then adult salmon, and then they swim up the river.
So they don't damage, weaken the salmon in any way.
Nope, it's a very symbiotic relationship that scientists haven't found that anything has happened to salmon by them doing that.
Oh, interesting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yes.
A wealth of knowledge there.
Yeah. Eileen, when you said they swim up the river, are you referring to the lamprey or to the salmon?
To the lamprey. So they actually detach from the fish in the ocean when they decide to swim back. So that's a good clarification.
Yeah. So it's just hard for me to believe that that sucking and moving process of a lamprey makes it from the ocean to Chelan County. I mean, what an arduous effort. It's just mind-boggling. But anyway, there's a great story, Anne, about the gentleman who used to manage our fishway, who was an artist, who would, at the end of the season, there were sometimes lamprey who were left, you know, in the fishway, and he would make plaster cast of them and then do a ceramic casting and then give those and then mount them and then give those as gifts to Native American leaders as we would enter into meetings. And they were a highly prized gift, and it really helped foster Chelan County PUD's relationship with tribal leadership based on that historical significance. So when you combine a dam operator with an artist, you get a great product. But it's a wonderful story.
Who was it?
Oh, Randy, now, come on. I cannot remember his name, but I believe he's retired in the last few years. But, it's just a great story in terms of fostering relationships based on the sacredness of the lamprey and the appreciation by the tribal entities.
Well, we could ask Aline to find out for us before our next meeting, but that I wouldn't do that to you. I would not do that. So it's great story, Dennis.
Yeah.
Ricky, I just forwarded the photo that I took at the Discovery Center to all of you. So if I could bring it up on our screen, I would, but I'm not that technologically advanced. But I did forward it to all of you.
Okay. Cool. Amazing what stories you get going with the presentation, right, Aline?
I always enjoy them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, we're going to talk about protecting other animals. Von Pope is going to discuss some no hunting policy at Rock Island Dam. Von?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Von Pope, Senior Wildlife Biologist for the district, and just wanted to give you guys a little heads up that for some time now we've had kind of an informal policy about some no hunting on the east side of the highway out on the Malaga-Alcoa Highway on property that the district owns that a large portion of the Rock Island project sits on. But there is 400 acres out there on that parcel, and over the years, some people have sought opportunities to hunt it because occasionally elk show up out there, possibly deer. It's not very common for the elk to be out there when the hunting seasons are on, but that did occur this last week. Typically, hunters would ask us permission, and we would generally tell them no, that we don't want them hunting that close to our project. But we had somebody shoot an elk legally because our property wasn't posted. On that parcel of land that it's kind of been informally not allowed for hunting. So we've taken some temporary measures, done some posting of that area now so that that stretch of land that we own east of the Malaga Alcoa Highway on district property is now posted as no trespassing for both security and safety purposes, particularly with folks out there with the high power rifles. We got a reservoir down there, a highway on the other side, and our project out there, and it's really hard to the best way to keep that safe and secure is just to post it. So we've done that kind of on a temporary basis, and we'll be adding some more permanent signage out there as we go on. Any questions?
Thank you.
But thank you.
That's a good area to have posted because that's a really big flat expanse and very poor shots to be taken in there.
Yeah, there's some potential consequences that we just, and it was informal. We just needed to formalize that action. So,
okay.
Good job, Lon.
Thanks. Thank you. Any other, Steve?
No, that's it for today.
Okay. Is Lisa in the room?
She is.
Hello, commissioners.
Afternoon.
Nothing like feeling like the year got away from us, like having three events left on our spreadsheet. So let me know if there's something I've missed and need to add, but we do have October 14th Waputa budget meeting for Commissioner Arsenault. It's virtual.
Yes.
November 17th Waputa meeting. Also virtual. And then we have the December 1 through 3 Waputa annual conference, and I haven't heard if that will be virtual as well yet.
So, Lisa, we have a meeting coming up later this week where we'll be discussing that topic.
Okay.
We'll let you know.
Okay.
And, Lisa, I don't think I'm signed up for the virtual on the 17th of November.
Okay.
So if you would please do so, I would appreciate it.
I will do that. Anyone
else?
Thank
you.
I'm on that, aren't I? I think I'm on that.
I'll make sure you are.
Okay.
Is there anything else I can do for you?
We're still virtually here. What more can a person, you got to joke about something in life.
You do. I agree.
That's right. Got to maintain your sense of humor.
We're
that's
discussing right. Travel plans with all Zoom meetings.
Yep.
That's kind of a contradiction in itself, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is.
So, okay. Anything else under commission travel? If not, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
item 10, there's a commission item request to make some adjustments and for the 2022 board meeting schedule. We've all seen the proposed motion to modify the schedule. Could I get somebody to make that motion? Probably need to read it.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, okay.
All right, I can make that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you want to do it, Ann?
No, you go ahead.
Okay.
I don't have it in front of me either.
Mr. President, I would propose a 2022 board meeting schedule to approve the modified regular board meeting schedule for calendar year 2022 as proposed to accommodate holidays and industry meetings, moving the following meetings as follows. January 3rd, 2022 will be moved to January 10th, 2022. January 17th, 2022 will be moved to January 24th of 2022. June 6th of 2022 will be moved to May 31st of 2022, and June 20 of 2022 shall be moved to June 13th of 2022. All meetings will be held in the headquarters boardroom, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue, Wenatchee, Washington, and all to commence at 10 a.m. unless further modified by future board action or the required virtual meetings as we have been having. I added that, Eric.
Yep, looks good. I was wondering if that was going to be there. I missed it.
Yeah, motion has been made. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
It's been made and seconded. Any discussion? And with lack of discussion, I would ask Rebecca a question. Does that leave us with just one June meeting?
So within the calendar month of June, yes, the first June meeting would occur on May 31st.
Okay.
Gotcha. And those are shifted to accommodate the APPA annual conference.
Okay. Just making sure that we didn't leave employees without paychecks on any given.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, it's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is carried. Item 11, follow-up on delegation of action items from the previous board meeting.
So we
Randy,
just...
may I have in here? Sorry to interrupt. I missed my opening here. I just have a positive comment I want to pass along. We pulled our boat out last weekend at the Manson boat launch, which is owned by Chelan PUD, actually probably managed by Manson Park. But anyway, it has all been completely refurbished, all new docks, all new pilings, new everything, actually. And it is beautiful. It is so well done. It is very safe, plenty of room. So I just want to congratulate Parks, congratulate whoever worked on this, whoever conceived of it. And I've received lots of positive comments from people. It's just so nice to use and so user-friendly and so much safer. So, and comments from people saying the PUD does things right. Whatever we do, whenever we do something, we do it right. I wanted to pass that along.
Well, thank you, Anne. And I actually stand corrected because I didn't give commissioners a chance for commissioner items after that motion. So you caught me, Anne. So any other commission items before we go to follow up?
I appreciate your comment, Anne. And the thing that's far reaching in that comment is that we do have the resources to do things right. And that takes a huge effort by so many people to bring all of that together. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Gary.
And I'd like to chime in and also thank you, Anne, for making those comments. And I have also heard most recently, again, just reiterating that the PUD does whatever it is they touch, they do it right. And that makes you proud. And you kind of puff your chest out a little bit that, you've got something to, at least you sit here and you have a job at the PUD. But it's staff that really pull all the levers and make those things work. And so this is an opportunity to thank staff for what it is that they do and making all of us look really good. And on that very same line, Eileen and Lance provided us a tour out at Rocky Reach this last week. And when I say us, I was referring to Commissioner Overbay and Commissioner Etherington. And the topic of the tour really was the habitat conservation plan. I'll tell you, they did a great job and once again made me puff my chest out as the other commissioners were just totally amazed, very complimentary. And as a matter of fact, they asked if we might be able to arrange something like this again in the future to show us other projects that the PUD has that they were totally unaware of. I think they will be a real supporter of the PUD going forward in terms of seeing what we do, how we do it, how much money we spend to do it and do it right within the county. And frankly, they were unaware of what it was that we were doing with the Habitat Conservation Plan. So kudos to staff once again. They did a great job. It certainly made me very proud on this tour, and I think we're going to see some real benefits from it.
Randy, may I make one more comment?
You bet.
Yeah, and it's, again, just following up on what Mr. Arsenault just commented on. In a design meeting related to the lobby of the new headquarters facility, it was regarding habitat conservation. And Dan's quote is, our commitment to HCP is greater than our obligation. And I just think that kind of summarizes our staff's commitment to where we are and how we do things. And it's just, obviously it's a quote that I wrote down and hold on to, because I just really believe that is the true nature of our staff regarding our habitat conservation, you know, program. So I love to have that opportunity to comment on it, but thank you.
Thank you. Any other commissioner items? Okay, now we'll go to follow-up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
We just had one, and I think we actually reported on this at the last board meeting. It was about comparing the total customer assistance since March 2020 versus the normal rate. Carrie Wendell has completed that with an email to the board.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Any delegation from this week?
I have two items. One, there was a request to look at the liquidity forecast 5 years back, 2016, and when that point of moving into the borrowing market would be. And a second one, to look at the cost per premises mile of extension, actually, for fiber build-out compared to the forecast for both urban and outlying customers. So be looking at that, too.
Is that covers it?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, is there any additional public comment? Hearing none, are there any other matters of general business that may necessarily come before the commission before we move into executive session? Eric, how long will we need, or Steve, for executive session?
45 minutes.
In that case, I think we'll move directly into executive session. We have to hang up and dial back in, I remind you, to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW. See you in a couple of minutes. We are coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. It is 2:20 in the afternoon. Is there any other business to come before the board? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.